Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast,
Parenting Young Adults
with Kim and Tora. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, for this episode, we have another special guest. And so without further delay, I'm going to admit her and have her come in and introduce herself. Hello again, Tawana. How are you?
Hello again. I'm fine. How are you doing, Kim?
I am fine. Thank you. Tawana Carter, this is my co-host, Tora Williams.
It is such a pleasure meeting you.
Hey, Tora, we got the tea power going here.
Absolutely.
So Tawana, as you probably know, we always allow our guests to introduce themselves. And I would like to offer you the opportunity to introduce yourself now.
Okay. So I am Dr. Tawana Carter. I'm a career transition coach for professional women in their 40s and 50s, and I help those women overcome the fear and anxiety of transitioning to a new career by empowering them to recognize and understand and communicate their unique value by empowering them with a sense of deep belief in their own unique strengths and abilities. And in addition to that, I'm also a licensed therapist. I've been a licensed therapist for over 10 years. This year will make 11 years. It's more like 10 and a half years. And so in addition to transition coaching, which I do a lot of anxiety coaching, I also do anxiety counseling. And I've done quite a bit of that with the pandemic.
I can imagine. That is, and I was just smiling because I'm like, when you said therapist, you know, how many people have said we need African-American female therapists in this world. And trust me, you are well needed.
Yes. It's been interesting because I have, you know, I have Hispanic males that come and I have Black males that come, and neither of those groups have been provided a space to just be and tell what they know, tell Absolutely. What they feel. They're Absolutely. Not even given that space to do that. So I always count it an honor when they come to me, because at first, you know, they're all buttoned up like, I'm fine. Yeah, everything's fine. I was like, no, it's not.
No.
No, it's not.
That's wonderful.
And so it is. It's an honor when they do trust you to just let it out.
I only know you, well, getting to know you, and then I have a friend who lives in California, and she's also a therapist, and she gears more to men, also African-American men, and she just opens up this world, and she's been, like, telling me little bits of stuff about, because, of course, you know, you hear that women, we spew all of our emotions out. We know that
we're processors.
But men, you know, hide their childhood traumas and their issues, and they do a lot of things, and we don't know, and they don't, you know, it's not like they have guy code. They don't tell us. Like, we have our girl code. Yeah. Guys know about us, girls know about us, but nobody knows about guy codes. I don't even know how to talk amongst each other.
And there's that thing, well, you know, I'm a man, nobody's gonna whoop my behind, nobody's gonna treat me like this, nobody's gonna treat me like that. And they don't wanna say, yeah, I was out by myself driving and two cops beat the crap out of me. That's not something you're going to talk to your bros about.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of men out there that have had that to happen. They push that stuff down.
And then what does it manifest into is the problem. How do they act out?
Because we know that women talk. We've been taught to talk, to get through it, to talk to our sistren and all of that sort of thing. And men many times are taught to keep everything buttoned up and to not be emotional. So I'm sure when they come to you and get the freedom to let it out, after you cajole them into doing so.
It's not so much as cajoled, it's to say, you know, I have 6.5 years in the military. I grew up in the military. My dad, you know, retired after 24 years. There's not much that has happened on this earth that I haven't heard in a counseling session. So, you know, there's space. I know that you went through things. I know, you know, from a child, I can remember 5 or 6 people talking in hushed tones when Black men were getting a beat down. That's been since the late 60s and 70s.
You said you experienced that?
I remember the adults talking about it in hushed tones.
Okay.
I remember that as a kid, 5, 6, 7 year old as a kid, I remember those conversations, and I remember the hush hush, everybody's trying to talk about it. But I remember Black men have been getting the beat down for a long time. And I've so never, once I say never. That, yeah, once I say that, they're like, oh, I said, I know. I may not know the specific incidents that you talking about, but I know you've gone through something. Mm. And then that opens up that space for them to go, oh, I was like, yeah.
So Tawana, have you ever heard any hushed conversations of that nature? I never heard anything
like that. And that was surprising when she said that to me, because I even tried to think of, I've heard men saying that they might have, you know, roughed up somebody in high school or had a fight, you know, in their lady years in a bar, but I've never heard of the trauma of a Black man saying he caught the beat down or got a, you know, beat up and, you know what I'm saying?
Talking about by police, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. It would, and you know, I'm from down.
She's from Alabama.
I'm from Alabama, right?
So I was gonna ask you where you were from.
Yeah. I'm from Alabama. And so it happened, right? It happened, you know. I remember being told, when you go out, act like this for the white folks. Don't you do this in front of those white folks, don't you? I got that as a kid, and I got that as a child because my parents got it, and they got it because their parents got it. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you said they said don't act like this, were you saying, well, like, don't be disobedient, or were they like,
correct,
act submissive, you know? Like,
you dress a certain way, you talk a certain way, you behave a certain way when you go out in public. That was very strong. I got tons of lessons. My siblings and I got tons of lessons. You don't do this when you go out in public. We don't act like this. We don't behave like this in public. So there was a certain persona that we were told. It was like drilled into us when we went out in public. You don't do this, you don't do that. And so, of course, as a therapist and, you know, going through training, I realized that was part of survival. You know, no doubt that came from the Emmett Till, no doubt that came from, and plus, you know, my family has a lot of trauma in it. And my dad told me just in the past few years, and I knew my granddad was a bad A. My granddad was my granddad. My granddad had a whole cache of weapons, right? That's how my mother grew up. Mm-hmm. That's how they grew up, right? And so my dad was telling me that my granddad and his father-in-law were outside of the jail, and they could hear my grandmother's brother, you know, my grandfather's brother-in-law being beaten by the policeman. And my grandfather was there. He had two of his young sons with him, which were under like seven. And his father-in-law was ready to ride posse to the jail, right, to get his son out. And so my grandfather was like, they gonna kill us. We got two kids, we can't ride. But that's how, you know, my grandfather and his father-in-law were. And then he was like, well, it looked like, oh yeah, we can't go in. So that trauma of being beaten wasn't something, it was a story that happened. It happened in my family. And my parents knew, my mom knew, they knew, right? And my mom told stories how as a kid, because my dad lived in city limits in Alabama, and my mom lived in a rural area.
Okay.
And she would say how, you know, Friday, Saturday night, white men would get drunk and they would ride through her neighborhood and shoot up. But like I said, my granddad, it wasn't a picnic. They waited, it was dark. It was about time to get dark. They would ride through the Black neighborhoods and shoot up. But like I said, my granddad had an arsenal. He had his, you know, when I think of my granddad, I think about, you know, what Malcolm X's father said, I'm a man. Well, my granddad lived that. So there was a chain. My mother said it was a chain. When they first heard the shots, there were people who ran across the house to house to house. And by the time they got into the neighborhood, they were loaded up and firing back.
Good.
That's what my mom grew up with. So she, even though she grew up with that, there was still this in the daytime though, you have to behave this way. You don't do this. You don't do that. You don't do that. So that was part of my upbringing. Oh my God. Until like I was 15, 16 years old.
And I would love if we could, you know me, I would love if we could adopt that policy of fighting back these days, because it just seems to me that we will kill each other at the drop of a dime, but we'll let other people do stuff to us and live without any consequences, nobody doing anything.
But that's a part of, And so that's a part of the dominant system. You have a group of people who are raised in a dominant system and told they're not worth anything. So if you're not worth anything, neither is the next man, neither is the next, or the next, or the next. So you killing each other, you already were told you all are not worth anything anyway. In fact, we have that figured out to the legal system, because you kill a white man, you're going to prison for life, if not death row. But you kill another black man, you might get 2, 3, whatever years. And so it's,
you have that, only right? The legal system, but the psychological programming is such that they hold the members of the dominant race in such high regard that it would not occur to them, we ought to retaliate.
But think about it. When you go out here in front of these white folks, don't you be acting a fool. I got to act special because I'm going out. So if I got to act special, it must mean those people are special. Now, that's not what they meant. It was survival technique. But what, as a child, heard, most of us heard, well, they must be special people because we got to get dressed up when we go in front of them. We have to act a certain way when we go in front of, front of them.
But not only that, the Jesus on your wall looks like them. The Jesus in the church you go to looks like them. Yeah, and so even though your parents may be telling you this as a survival tactic, there is still that those other levels of programming that are involved in that too. So, well, this wasn't the topic we intended to discuss, but this is such an interesting conversation. And it does sort of segue into the topic that I said I wanted to discuss with you, because that we wanted to discuss with you, because you and Tora have something in common. And that is that both of you have black daughters who date white young men. And I wanted to explore that and allow you all to talk about that, because it's something you have in common. And I guess I would start by asking, what is your general feeling about the fact that your daughters date white?
So I don't have any problems with it. I remember, so I grew up in the military, right? So I grew up around Vietnamese, white, black, African, French, you name it. I grew up around that. So there's quite a bit of what, you know, some folks call race mingling, right? There's quite a bit of interracial dating since I was 6, 7, the first time I went to Germany, where I was stationed with my dad. So I have.
You're saying you saw it or you experienced it?
I saw it. Okay. No, I experienced it and I saw it. Okay. It's just, you know, we're Army brats, right? My dad was in the Army. Yeah, it is something that was normal, even in the 70s. I mean, I had a white boyfriend in what, first, second grade? That was something that was, we all did it, correct? And I grew
Did you know he was white?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. See, I didn't know.
And so I have a storied history, right? And my mother was truly something else. My dad was Martin Luther King and my mother was Malcolm X. So that's how I grew up, right?
Jesus.
So my mother, she took a different tactic with race when I was growing up. Number one, my school only had like 2 or 3 white kids in it, but they were poor. And I didn't know that at the time. Mm-hmm. They were poor. They would come to school dirty. They would come to school bare feet. So my assumption, because these are the only white people I saw, was that all we white people were like that. And they just, some of them cleaned up when we went to town. But in my mindset, because it's all I saw at school, was all white people this, right? And so my mother pushed that. She was like, yeah, they're nasty. They're dogs. They're this, they're that, they're this. And so that's how I grew up. But in Alabama, but then we went to Germany where we lived among everybody. So I guess my mother was fit to be tied because my best friend was white. Angie Watley, my best friend was white. And I can remember my mom having problems with that. My dad is fine, but my mom having problems with that. So I didn't see anything wrong with the dating or the friendship. The first time I felt uncomfortable having a white best friend is back in the 70s, the ability groups, right? So you were smart, you were super smart, you were in the middle or you were in the lower because it was legal to do that. So I was put in the smarter group and we were all whisked away for some kind of school experiment. So I was there, maybe 3 black kids total. and all the other Black kids went to another school. All my friends went somewhere else. It was fine with me. I really didn't notice, correct? But when my white friend and I, because we had way more freedom than mm-hmm. they did. Mm-hmm. And so we went over to that school. We were talking to the Fitz, and that was the first time I felt uncomfortable because they were saying rude things about my friend who was white. So I was very uncomfortable with that. I didn't really hang out with them after that because I was uncomfortable. I didn't know how to breach that. It was my friend. She's white, but who cares? Mm-hmm. But they saw it differently. So that was my upbringing, very much used to that. I also joined the military, right? And so living in the South, trying to date was interesting. So I actually raised my girls, you need to find love where love finds you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I said. You find love where love finds you. If love is Black, white, Asian, Italian, African, Filipino, whatever love is, when you find it, it finds you. That's your person, right? And I can remember at the time my daughter was 10 and she was hot. She wasn't dating no white guy. What was I gonna say something like that for?
Really?
And she was not. And then I pulled them out into, you know, a school system that was predominantly white. And she got to watch all the Black boys date all the white girls.
Mm. Hey.
And so I watched this, I watched it, and I watched it with all three of my daughters. All the little Black boys, you know, dated all the little white girls.
Yes, they did.
And I told them, you find love where love finds you. That's I never said you have to date white, you got to date Black. No. I just said you find it where it finds you. So all three of them, their first boyfriends were all white. But I can say that not one Black boy tried to date them.
Right.
So let me ask you this. So mm-hmm. it's by circumstance, it just is how it turned out to be. But have they ever, either of them, you have three daughters, right?
I have three daughters. One of them have dated a Black guy, just one.
Okay, just one has mm-hmm. dated Black. And how old are they, Tawana?
They are, oh, I know you're gonna ask me this question. So my oldest is 27, right? Uh-huh. And the middle daughter, cause she keeps lying about her age.
Sounds like an Aquarius Taurus.
So she's 23 and the baby is 22.
Oh, okay. And so which yeah. one is the one that dated Black?
The middle one.
The middle one. Did it last for a while or was it short-lived?
It did not. It was short-lived. It was short-lived. It was her first white boyfriend was way short-lived. That was a couple of weeks. And that one went south. And then the Black guy. They dated for several months through most of her freshman year, and then they broke up. And then she dated another guy who was Russian part, who was white, but he was Russian, of Russian descent. Ooh. And so that one lasted a little longer.
Do you think that that's just their attraction, or that's just their preference, attraction, or they just have nothing to do with Black guys at all? Like, it's just...
So my home in Alabama is in rural Alabama, right? Ooh. It's rural. Mm-hmm. It's, I live in like the richest county in Alabama, but mm-hmm. it's fairly rural. So there are not a lot of Black kids there, oh. right? There's not a lot of Black boys, but the Black boys that are there, most of them are dating the white girls. Now I have a friend that told her son, you're not dating a white girl. No. And she was purposely said, I'm raising my son. You pull your pants up. I don't want him hanging. You do well in school. Mm-hmm. You're going to college. You're going to be a great husband for a Black woman. Okay. That was how she raised him. And I think she might've given up that fight, maybe his senior year of high school or the freshman year. I want to say maybe freshman year of college, he dated a white girl, but she was adamant, you are not. And but
you think he did it as rebellious, or he was just curious?
No, it was that's all you saw. Okay. You know, football players, most of the football players, the baseball players, what, basketball players, the guys, Black guys were in, most of them were in sports, right? And so the little white girls was, you know, they was on their game, right? And that's what most of those Black boys dated. I can say that some of the Black girls that had ties with the rest of Birmingham, which is urban, they would date guys from there, because the majority of the Black boys in that school system or in that city where they were dating white girls. Mm. So it's not so much as a preference as that's who first expressed interest in my daughters.
Okay. And Tora, do you think that your daughters had a similar situation or no? It was a choice or was that's who is available?
No, I think my kids just, you know, it's not attracted to Black men in any sense, because I've never even heard them like celebrities. Like, you know, Michael B. Jordan is the it guy right now. And how Denzel is for us, Michael B. is for them. And they just, they're not, well, even any of, you know, they're just not, I've never even heard them say anything about a Black person, a Black male in any aspect, like it was great. Wow. So that's what always, you know, it didn't bother me or anything. It's just that I think I let them, you know, be free love. They, it's not even just white guys. They would date anyone, you know, that they were attracted to, but I just don't think that they're attracted to Black men at all, at all. And my first boyfriend was a Jewish white guy, you know, that I just didn't even know he was Jewish and I didn't know he was white. That's just the way we were raised. Until I got older, I knew all of that. And I literally was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know. You know, I just thought I was just dating a guy that was cute, that was in my elementary school, in my middle school, and that was it, you know? And we weren't like intimate or anything. We were dating, because I didn't do that back then. But I caught
Yeah, we're a different race. we're raised differently. We're raised a little different.
But I got started, but no, I wasn't doing any of that back then. But for my daughters, they started dating late in life in high school. And when they did start dating, it was predominantly the Spanish or white guys. They never had a Black boyfriend or never talked to a Black guy. So, and I know Black guys try to talk to them, because I, you know, I sneak and read some stuff and see got Black guys in their DMs saying, I would love to take you out and stuff. But they're like, not interested.
And you're married to their Black father. So they saw that model for them, but they still made a different choice.
Yeah.
Let's take a short sponsor break. Now back to the current episode.
So my daughters are different in that they think Black guys are cute and they do swoon over the actors and everything. So, you know, that wasn't there. And they actually swooned over the cute Black guys, but the cute Black guys were chasing, you know, the white girls. So, yeah, that's the way. And now I will say that they like Hispanic guys, so they're the rainbow,
They're the rainbow. And my son, before he went to Howard, he only dated Caucasian women. So after Howard, I haven't seen him with any race other than, you know, African.
Isn't that interesting? What do you think accounts for that, Tor?
I think once he realized that they were. Because all he saw was Caucasian women. He went, like I told you, he went to a Catholic school. And it was St. Mary's. So there was, his prom date was the only Black girl in his school. So, and she was gorgeous, by the way. So it wasn't hard for him to say, you know, I want to go with her. Plus, you know, at that moment, I definitely like that. But once he got to Howard, I think he saw equally beautiful, successful, driven, same desire to want to be something in life, Black women. But before then, I think it wasn't really other, you know, that many out there. I don't think he saw that as a variety for him, that Black women were successful, beautiful, outgoing, and wanted to be something. I think he just thought that, you know, what was in front of them was all that, you know, they were to our layers. And I really think that, you know, I don't think they showed him positive pictures. I wouldn't expect them to, you know, they taught him about slavery, of course. And, you know, you taught him about, you know, some of the Black inventions, but I don't think he actually knew until he got to, you know, historically Black college that, like, wow, y'all are beautiful and sexy and everything under the sun. So I think that's what changed him. And I really think it would change my daughters too, if they were around predominantly or historically Black anything, you know, I think that would change them too. But I think because they were not around that at all in their entire life, from their sports to their colleges, it's just like that's what they're readily available for.
But their high school is the same high school that my kids went to. And that's a really diverse high school with Blacks, whites, Latino, a lot of Latinos, all kind of folks there. And, you know, as everyone knows, both my kids date Black. But, you know, your son's situation is very different because it sounds like he dated what was available. He didn't have any other choice. But your daughters, did have Black, I don't know what quality of candidates, but there were Black boys at that school.
They were there, and they all, my oldest daughter, who's 20, will be 21 soon, she only had Black girlfriends there. But my youngest daughter, her best friend throughout high school was a Caucasian girl. Mm-hmm. And so it was, for her, I kind of can understand, she didn't, you know, see any or hang around anything. But when they party, like you said, they party around a diverse group of kids, and somehow that's all she gravitates to, or they gravitate to.
So Tawana, your daughters are still in Alabama?
They're all still in Alabama. My oldest lived in Georgia for a while, and she's back in Alabama now. And so it's, I was listening to you guys talk. So most of my daughter's friends were white. Each one of them had one or two Black girlfriends, and that was it. There wasn't a lot of Black people where they grew up at. So, and I will say that the star athletes, the ones, the Black kids that were not star athletes, Black boys, mm-hmm. were not really anybody they'd be interested in dating. And so that was tough. I don't think most of them even dated. Those Black men even dated. If they did, it may have been someone else from, you know, from Birmingham or the surrounding communities. And for some of those Black kids in where we grew up, which is Helena, Alabama, where we live, some of them have family, their roots is actually in Birmingham. So when they go back to Birmingham, they're around Black people. So some of the girls, you know, the Black girls, because most of the Black guys were not dating them either, they had boyfriends from Birmingham. But, you know, my family is not from Birmingham. Now, we lived there, but we're transplants. So I think that made a difference for some of the other Black girls down there. But I will say that the boys they dated, some of them dated only Black women. They were white, but they mm-hmm. only dated Black women. There's a couple that dated both, but most of them, they only dated Black women.
And do you notice a dip? Like, my daughters are across the board Black. There is, I think I missed a whole bunch of Blackness growing up. I didn't get a lot of seasoning in me. I wish I had. I'm catching up though. I'm catching up real fast. But my daughters have all kind of seasoning. They are right off the break. They are Black women that are dating white men. And I know the white men, especially for my oldest daughter, have learned so much about Black culture that they are like, I always tell them, I'm like, it's gonna be hard for you to date somebody else other than a sister after messing with her. I mean, my daughter will take her weave out and put it on the counter. My daughter will tell you your food doesn't have seasoning in it. Anything, there is like, there is no, I'm trying to be a white woman that a Black woman can be a white woman.
Not at all.
Not my
children. I mean, My daughter's boyfriends used to come to the house and they'd be like, yeah, oh yeah. They would come for barbecues, or they come for Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner, and they would eat and they just kind of lay back and pat their stomach like, yeah, we don't get this at my house. So they were very into Black culture. So they weren't walking on the wild side. They knew Black culture.
And so all the white guys they've dated have been lily white. And by the time my daughter's finished with them, it is, I get afraid almost. I'm like, they gonna lead the revolution because they don't dumb it down. And that's why I guess I really don't even bother or worry about it, that they're being tainted in any way. Or because once you know a Candace Owens, I don't know her personally, but once you hear her speak and you know she's married to a Caucasian man, I never worry about that with my children at all. They are the direct opposite of her. Yeah. If anything, they say things, I'm like, you have to say that? Ma, I don't care. Let them know. They need to know. I'm like, oh my God, they will say it.
Now my kids started off in, my oldest started off in a private school. So that was predominantly white. Then I transferred them to a Christian school, which was, there was all Black. Yeah. There might have been one white kid, maybe fifth or sixth grade or something, but it was all Black. So they had that Black experience, but my kids didn't really fit in because, you know, I drilled them on the way they spoke, the way they pronounced words. I had to do speech pathology. I worked with a speech therapist because not only did I have a Southern drawl when we left Alabama, I couldn't speak consonants and sounds. So I was in speech, you know, with a speech therapist for 2 or 3 years. And
I do not hear your Southern twang. And I listen, and that's my thing that I do. I was like, where are you from? Because when you said Alabama, I'm like, well, I hear something, but I don't hear Alabama.
Yeah. And when I joined the military, because I said I was from Alabama, people look down upon you as if you're stupid. Mm-hmm. And so I had to straighten many people out. Let me help you out. But I was determined that my kids' speech patterns would not betray them, where people need to look at them stupid first and go, oh, okay, I was wrong. You're smart. I didn't want that for them. So because I raised them like that and I took them out of the country and we traveled and we did all these things, there was, for the most part, my kids didn't really fit in mm-hmm. with the average Black child in Birmingham. They did not. Now, they tried. They did. But they were always kind of apart. And so that was when I realized, I was like, you know, I started telling my oldest daughter was about, 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And I started telling her, you need to find love where love finds you. Mm-hmm. And like I said, she didn't want to hear, because she had gotten to the Christian school. It was all Black. So she didn't want to hear about dating white people. Right. In fact, I found one of her diaries where she called me an Oreo. And my feelings were hurt. I was like, first of all, where did you learn language like that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so when I started telling her, you know, find love where love finds you, she was in her Oreo stage, right? And when I pulled them out of Birmingham, and we, you know, bought a house where they could just go to school for free because mm-hmm. the school system was really good, it switched. And so after a bit, she realized it, you know, and I can say that, you know, I told her first boyfriend, I mean, was just the nicest, mm-hmm. respectful, treated my daughter like a queen. I was like, so here's your standard for life. Whether he's Black, white, Italian, whatever, this is your standard for life. This is how a man treats you.
So when your girls went to college, did they go to PWI, predominantly white institutions, all three of them?
All three of them.
Did anybody try to, Tawana is my soror in Delta Sigma Theta. Ooh. Did anybody try to play, any of them try to pledge Delta?
They did not. My middle daughter is like, I don't want that. And my youngest daughter that's my wildflower, you know, Beatles fan. She wanted a Beatles. So she's my wildflower, right? Mm-hmm. Just, you know, vegan. You know, dyes the hair in her arm colors when she wants to. Really? That's my flower child.
Yeah.
That's my flower child. She got that from her daddy. Okay. and the oldest one, it was, you know, graduate or pledge. And she was right at that point where she'd intended on it, but she was majoring in engineering. She said, I couldn't swing it. I couldn't. I wanted to, but I couldn't swing it. I think she actually spoke. She had, some of the girls she went to the Christian school with were there at her university and had pledged.
Oh wow!
And she said I couldn't swing it with my course load. And my youngest daughter, no,
it's not even on the horizon, right?
Okay, no, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't want to.
But they knew. It was this is so funny. My middle daughter had her roommate because. My middle daughter went to the University of Alabama, but the, you know, Delta's a,
that's the Crimson Tide one that everybody's
talking about. That's the Crimson Tide. Yeah, it's the University of Alabama, right? Okay. So the Deltas were kicked off the yard for a long time. So my daughter's roommate pledged Zeta. And so she was expecting, you know, to, her status is going to rise up a little because she pledged. And so she came back to my daughter. My daughter's like, she told her, you didn't say nothing. And my daughter's like, say what? I pledged, you know, Zeta Phi Beta. My daughter said, what is that?
Thank you. Whoop, 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 but I won't go there.
So she said, it's a Black sorority. My daughter said, no, it isn't. There's only two, Delta Sigma Theta and Alpha Kappa Alpha.
I do know a woman who pledged Zeta from my high school. She just pledged a few years back, so I'm going to tread lightly, but your daughter shares a very popular opinion amongst many of us, I will say.
I had to take that one. All I told her was, sure, you can pledge Delta, but I'm not, my money's not paying for you to pledge AKAs. And that's all I ever talked about. So she really didn't know there was sigma gamma rho or zeta phi beta. So it was, it kind of took the air out of that, out of that young lady's sail.
Oh my God, that is hilarious. Oh wow.
Yeah, all the intentional, but
all deltas, every last one of them.
And I have a lot of AKAs in my family too, but I don't know what to tell them. I mean, you know, they chose what they chose, but I knew the way to go, yeah. Of course.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, I'm not trying to change the subject, but I wanted to bring this up because my brothers, one of my brothers moved to Florida and the other one moved to North Carolina. And that was my first experience actually going to the South was North Carolina. I've been to Florida.
That's not the South.
Yeah, North Carolina is very cosmopolitan.
That's not the South.
He's in the Raleigh-Durham area too. So that's...
Yeah, he lives right outside of Raleigh and Apex, which is...
different from the South.
Very close. So I've never experienced the South really like that. I think the furthest I'd gone was... Atlanta, Georgia, of course, during the Freaknik era, which I also didn't get the Southern experience. Mm-hmm. So when I went there, there was, I guess, people there who were from Alabama. And we were going into a store and I, of course, because I have manners, I held the door open for the people that were coming behind me. And no one said thank you. Everybody just went in. So, of course, the door was very heavy.
These are white or black people behind you?
White people.
Okay.
And there were about six of them. So the last two was a woman and two children. Well, the last three was a woman and two children. So of course, by the ones going in, no one said, thank you, or I got it. I let the door slam on the last three people. So of course, all of them turned around and they started, you know, trying to like say stuff like, well, what were you thinking about? What, who, why would you do that? You saw her coming. I said, first of all, none of y'all said thank you. And I don't know where you're from, but I'm not from here. I'm from up north. And what I saw was you disrespecting someone with manners. I don't know how y'all do it down here, but once y'all did that to me, I felt some kind of way. So yeah, it might've slammed on the child foot and the woman's foot, but I don't care. So of course, that was my thing. So they said that they were from the deep South. And I was like, what does that mean? You know, I don't even know. So the lady at the cash register said, oh, they're from Mississippi or Alabama. I said, oh, that's the deep South. She was like, well, I'm assuming that's what they, she said, cause we have a lot of people, you know, that moved to North Carolina from those places. Well, I'm not gonna lie to you. I never had a desire to go to either one. We had gymnastics meets that were supposed to be in both of those places. And because I had only heard the horror stories of the deep South, which was Alabama, I never had any desire to want to ever go there or want to give anybody a dollar of anything of mine there. But when I met you and I heard all the wonderful things you're saying, I think I'm like what Kim's teaching me about Africa. She so much that I'm on the internet every night looking and learning more about Africa because I didn't realize I was prejudiced. I dare say I'm racist because I feel like that is such a corporate thing that I dare say.
Not racist, but
I've been made prejudiced about Alabama. You making it out to be this place. And I'm like, you said, I refuse to make me think that I'm dumb because I got a Southern accent. I'm like, wait, what? And I'm like, you're saying all this stuff. I wanna experience it now.
So Black and white people feel that way about people from Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so, because I remember, you know, when I was a little older, I was asking my mom, why did I have to take those classes? You know, I was a child, I tell people all the time, I was a special ed child. They pull out of the class and I went and sat with this lady to teach me how to talk. And so my mother.
And now she's a doctor. So things can change. Never be discouraged.
They can. And so my mother said that she said, because we were from the South, Black and white, and we spoke with the Southern drawl, they said none of us could speak. So they made us do speech pathology, go to the speech therapist. So I don't know how true that was, but I just remember being singled out and pulled out because of that. And I can remember even my friend who was from Georgia, her husband was like a major in the Army, and she was, you know, there was an officer's wives club. So when your husband is, you know, one officer, lieutenant, captain, colonel, major, whatever, there's an officer wives club. Well, now it's officer spouses club, I would imagine. But she even said that the women there would go, oh, you're up north now. Your child's going to need some real gloves and not those yarn things because they get wet and he gets cold. And they spoke to her like she was a complete idiot. Now, here's someone that's been married for like almost 20 years, traveled the world with her husband, traveled the world, because they were married 16 years before they had kids. Mm-hmm. Then they had a child, but they spoke down to her like she didn't know how to dress them. And they would say things like, oh, we're going to a function and casual means this. And like they had to actually tell us how to dress. Wow. So yeah, then that was because we said we're from Alabama or from Georgia or Mississippi or Louisiana. People just assume you're backwards and you're dumb.
Tennessee too, maybe, right?
Tennessee, Kentucky, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what Tora mm-hmm. was saying about her experience in North Carolina with the whites in the door, mm-hmm. does that sound like a kind of entitlement that a white person from the Deep South might feel?
So that's a it depends question, right? Because, you know, I've had plenty of white kids come to my house, their parents come, white kids stayed over at nighttime, my daughter stayed at their house. You know, I've gone into plenty of stores and had white people open the door for me. Mm-hmm. I've opened the door for them. And it was just the thing that you did, right? It was normal. Oh. We did it for everybody.
Also, said really quick, she said that you should be lucky because you'll have some people from the Deep South that, girl, when you walking down the street, they want you to step off the curb and move out. That was one of the things I meant to bring up.
What year was this, Tora?
This was, my brother's been there a couple times. So it was probably about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago.
So, and that there goes to the it depends question, mm-hmm. because we were in Birmingham, and really Helena is a suburb of Birmingham, even though it's very rural. Mm-hmm. It is a suburb of Birmingham, so that is different. Mm-hmm. But you still mm-hmm. have places, I put it to you like this, you have Auburn University, right, which is...
Now let's take this quick moment to recognize our sponsors. Now, back to the current episode.
Southern Alabama, near the, not too far, a couple hours from the Florida state line. Okay. You have Alabama, which is 45 miles from Birmingham. Now, Alabama gets a lot of flack about sororities, and it's not as much as they used to, but racial incidences, right? Mm-hmm. But Auburn gets off the hook because Auburn is further away from Birmingham. However, you will have people to come to University of Alabama and Auburn University, and they are white, and they have seen very few Black people in their lives. Mm-hmm. They have grown up almost totally in a white society, and the Blacks that they saw were predominantly poor on food stamps or wealth stamps. So they have this idea that all Black people are this. Mm-hmm. So when you held that door open for them, it's like, I'm entitled to. She's serving me like she's supposed to. But wow, that's not all white people in Alabama, because one thing that I saw, my flower child protested, it probably still protesting now since George Floyd.
You told me that.
Yes, but predominantly the people she's protesting with are white. When George Floyd happened in May, mm-hmm. up until February, March, mm-hmm. those people protested, mainly whites with a few Blacks in there. Mm-hmm. And they protested from Mobile, Alabama to Huntsville, Alabama, mm-hmm. and all in between. They were predominantly white.
Wow.
So it depends. So it really does just
depend. So it really depends. It depends on what town they're from. And some of these really rural towns where all the Black people they see, like if they're coming from a Black Belt county where it's just very rural and most of the Black people there are poor, they have an idea that all Black people must be this. Okay. I mean, part of the reason why I really figured out it was time for me to leave Alabama is after I got my doctorate, again, people that know me and they know that I don't tell people, you got to call me Dr. Carter, because that, you know, I'm a doctor whether or not you call me one or not. That's how I think about it. However, I was providing services for the VA in homes. And when I introduced myself, I always introduced myself as Dr. Carter. Mm-hmm. And depending on the flavor, whether or not I said, you can call me Tawana. But there are people that just demanded to know my first name. And what's your first name? It's Doctor.
Doctor.
Because in Alabama, it is a hard and fast rule. You don't call me by my first name unless I offer it. And furthermore, if I'm Black and you want to go straight to my first name and we haven't built rapport, there's a reason why you're doing it. And I was very adamant.
That reason starts with an R.
It happened on CNN.
It happened several times, and I had people that will say, "Hey, you," and not call, but to keep from saying Dr. Carter, they would say, "Hey, you," and they refuse. And I was like, "It's."
And we're talking about Caucasian people.
Yeah, they refuse to call me Dr. Carter. And again, if I introduce myself as Ms. Carter, I'm telling you, you don't get to call me by my first name, and I don't get to call you by your first name either. And to push the issue by consistently asking me for my first name, you don't get to do that because we don't know each other like that. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was like, I need to switch. I want to stay the person I am as I am. And the more I hear that, it would make me angry. So I was like, it's time for a change of scenery. You're done with the South.
I said that because my friend that I was telling you about that lives in California, that's also a doctor, or Dr. Bryant, I either call her Doc when I text her or say something, or I say Dr. Bryant. I never call her by her first name or just say, I just feel like once you earn that title, and I even have a stepmother who's a doctor, I even, you know, call her Doc now. I think once you earn that title, it's yours.
Well, you do know that a law degree is a Juris Doctorate. So technically, yeah. I am doctor as well, but I'm just playing. But you know, the thing that you said, Tawana, about it depends on where you are, I think mm-hmm. that really is relevant in a lot of parts of the country. It's relevant in Maryland. It's relevant in Virginia. It's probably relevant in upstate New York. It's relevant in a station lot of there. Places.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Yeah, yes, it's relevant ma'am, it in is. Massachusetts. If you're not mm-hmm. near, even if you're in Boston, but you know, it's relevant in a lot of parts of the country. Are you in a diverse metropolitan area? Because if you are, that's going to affect the nature of your experience as a Black person versus being in a rural area where there are some traditional ways that I don't think any of us would probably be comfortable with.
Yeah, speaking of that, I taught school in Florida from 1994 to 1998. And of course, all the janitors, custodians were all Black. Mm-hmm. And there's this one Black custodian, which, you know, he reminded me of my grandfather. So that's a sign of respect, right? You, yes, sir, no, sir. That's just, you know, how you're raised to treat people. That man would not look me in the eye. And I had seen on movies where Black men had been taught to, you never look a white man in the face, you look to the side, you look at the ground. Yeah. It blew my mind in 1994 because I was a teacher and he had elevated me in his mind. He refused to look me in my eye. And it just bothered me. And because it was like, I've seen this on television, but I'm seeing it in real life. He did not. Everybody, he would look to the side and look down and cant his head a little bit to be sure you knew he wasn't looking you in the eye and disrespecting you. And I guess it bothered me because it was hurtful. I, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you've gone through it. You've lived through stuff I've only read about or seen movies on TV. Yeah. You are due respect because you survived, right? But he would not. And even though, you know, we would talk and chit chat for the 4 years I was there, he never would look me in the eye. And that just was like, wow.
That's PTSD. That's a response to trauma.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it is.
You're the licensed therapist, but it sounds like PTSD to me.
It is.
It's survival. You know, it is survival. You know, when you talk about DSM-5, which is, you know, what therapists use to diagnose people, and it's gotten better, but you know, it was diagnosing Black men with a lot of schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia in the 50s, 60s, and 70s because of, for us, it was survival techniques. Talk about the man's gonna get me, the man's watching me. It's like, that's not paranoia, that's the truth. They know when they're on the streets how they gotta behave with the man. And they know that if they don't do a certain thing or behave a certain way around the man, it was going to go bad for them. We still getting Black men killed now, so that hasn't changed. Go ahead.
Yeah, when I lived in Atlanta, I think, Tora, I may have mentioned this one time before, I met I met a lot of people from rural areas in Georgia who had moved to the big city. And one of the women that I befriended, I could hear the fear of white people in her voice. Oh no, you know, those white people, they're gonna find you. Doesn't matter if you try to hide, they're gonna get you. And it was clear to me it from DC. I'm like, girl, what? I wanted to say that, but I was sensitive because I understood that she was coming there. From a different place, but I could
It's still there, Kim. It's still there. It is still, I have relatives. It bothers me. But I gotta understand, you know, my dad was in the military, so we lived all around the world, but there's still that fear. Mm. There is still very much that fear. It used to be a time, of course, that's kind of going out the window now with interracial dating, but there used to be a time when, you know, the fear of God was put in black boys. You don't date a white girl. You don't go to her house. You don't be seen here. You don't do this. You don't do this. And that fear was passed on from generation to generation because so many people feared for their son's life, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, now they, you know, they chase each other. And for most places, it's not a problem. There are still some places that is still a problem.
You know, one time, because I'm a writer as well, one time I went to a workshop, like a Richard Wright, Zora Neale Hurston, like a black workshop. Mm-hmm. And so all of us were black, all of the aspiring authors. Mm-hmm. And one girl was from the South and said that she dated white men, but that it was a secret. She dated them on the down low. And I was like, girl, are you kidding me? But that's what she said.
I had friends that said, you know, these were educated men. Once a black woman dates a white guy, she can't come back to a black guy. She's done. She's no more good to the black race.
He's saying that, but trust me when I tell you, some of them white men just treat black women like queens. They don't want them to perm their hair. They want the natural. You don't have to get all dolled up and I just want you in your natural. Some of them don't even want to go back because it's work. Dating a brother can be work. Like they want a certain look and aspect in life. And you just get at some point in time, you're like, love, I don't feel like it today. And I know
you get what you get.
Other sisters do it. I'm like, you look like that. And he's like, girl, he loves my afro and my lips. And, you know, no, you don't want even no lipstick on. I'm like, what?
Remember some years ago, I used to notice this, especially in Wisconsin where I went to undergrad, it seemed like the white men always dated the most black women.
I'm noticing
the ones who wore the natural, because back then it was unique. Now we're all getting into natural, but back then it was like, oh, she's wearing locks. She's wearing her natural curl pattern. And those were the white people, the white men flocked to those women. I never knew what that was about though.
And they still do. I'm telling you, I've been watching it lately and I've just been saying, y'all ain't putting in no work like with these guys, none. Like your natural form. And I think they more attracted to your brain and where you, and they can, you know, have a conversation about politics or anything. They just love the fact that they can have a con, and we don't, as black women, we go deep. You know, we don't fix, we can have six kids and we don't make it seem like it's a hard day's work. You know, true. I know for a fact, being around some women and those type of women all the time, if they got four kids, you better believe that is the day's work for them. Don't ask them to do anything else. That is the epitome of life. But with black women, we like, oh, we had to go to work. We had to go to school. We had to take care of the kids. We had to do this. We had to do that. And they look
at our auntie, stop by my mother's, all that.
Yes.
And admire that. And they're like, are you kidding me? My wife has a chef. She has a nanny. She has a housekeeper. How do y'all do it? And we do it all. So I know when I hear them talk, they be like, yo, how do you do it? How do you do it? Like they admire us for that. And you know, sometimes brothers don't give us our credit when we see it. They know we doing it, but they won't ever say, you know, oh my God, my wife cleaned the house. She cooked, she take care of the kids. She going to school, she work. You be like, brother, I need you to just tell us a little bit. That's what we went. That's
appreciation, a little appreciation.
Tara likes to get her roses. Way. Tara said, give me my roses. Where are they?
That's all I'm saying. So
this is a question I have for you ladies, since that has not been my experience. How do you find that the parents of the white young men your children are dating, or even in Steve's case, the white women, are as open as their children to interacting with you, to embracing the interracial relationship, or have you seen pushback from the family on the other side?
I've had one pushback, and she humiliated her son, and I could have just wept for this kid. So my youngest daughter's first boyfriend was white, and he pretty much told his parents, F all of y'all, I like black girls, and that's what I'm dating. You don't tell me what to do. pretty much that's what he said to his parents. I don't care what you tell me. And his parents were like, they weren't feeling it. So, you know, my, you know, I worked a lot. I had a private practice. I was, you know, getting a PhD, and I was like, okay, let me go meet. She's dating. Let me go meet the mother so we can click and make sure everything, you know, just have that vibe going, right? So I got over there and I drove up and to meet. Well, first of all, I was out there for a minute. I'm trying to think. I was out there for several minutes before she finally came out. And I was like, really? You're right there. You know, I see you, right? So she finally came out and said, oh, his dad got drunk and left again. Yeah, he gets drunk all the time. He gets drunk and he just leaves me. And she just starts pouring out the family business. Like, she laid it out. And I looked at over at this kid and he just dropped his head to his chest and started kicking the dirt on the ground because she called herself trying to say, you know, we're like good and poor people, so you don't want any contact with us. And I just kind of listened to her and I nodded and I looked at him and I just shook my head. I was like, you have issues, but you're humiliating this child. And I wanted to say that, but I was like, I don't know you, so I can't go there. But he was a really sweet kid. That was the only pushback I had. The second guy she dated, I think she tried to adopt my daughter. I mean, she,
so totally different.
You know, I was a little, because each time they date, I want to check it, and it's a running thing in my family. My brother were in Arizona, so my sister was the closest to Alabama. And so my sister gave him the rundown. My sister, they had to meet my sister, not my dad, not my brother. They had to deal with my sister. And she was no joke. So the running joke is, yeah, you dating? So let me bring my sister to you so she can talk to you. And so they had to withstand that. But my dad had a problem. He had a problem with my oldest daughter. You know, he grew up in the South. That's what he knew. And he had a problem why she couldn't date Black boys. He wanted to know. And then it was like, you know, he finally came up and see all the little Black boys dating little white girls. And he became her fiercest protector. If anybody say anything to you because you dating a white man, you call me, tell them to call me. If I need to come back, you let me know. Okay. So he became her fiercest protector. He had a problem at first, but he realized this. I think he saw how Patrick treated her. Okay. And that did it for him. But yeah, didn't have any problems with any of them, except for that one. But other than that, they were real good people. Cause that's my thing. I wanna see, are you on the wild side, you know, trying to see what it takes, you said what it takes like. Are you here for jungle fever purposes? Cause you're gonna have a problem with me. And so I do. I'm honest, I do. Every last one of them, this first thing I wanna do, sit down, chit chat, talk with them. I wanna know about you. And so none of them have been. And so I've been pretty happy about that.
Well, that's good. What about you, Tora? Have you experienced any? I know that you've been pretty close with at least one of their boyfriend's family. Have you ever experienced the flip side?
Never. And there was, and this actually, I'm not saying this as a coon. I'm not wearing this with a badge of honor, but I just do. I believe that my upbringing has given white folks another look at Black people. I don't think they even come, I really don't believe they see us as the Black people they were programmed to believe were out there in the world. Because I remember when we were at one of her ex-boyfriend's family house and they had a huge yard. So they went there and they had a church get together, I guess. People, members from their church were all in their backyard. And so they were like, oh, please stay. You know, we got food and everything. And I was like, okay, we will stay. Cause she used to stay the weekends at their house. So we were going there to pick her up. And I was like, all right, I'll stay. So we're talking, you know, to some of the people in the church, you know, whatever. And we're, of course, me, I'm silly. So, you know, I'm making jokes about stuff and we're laughing. And a couple of people, I guess, start feeling comfortable and they come over towards us and they say, well, this is, so-and-so, because I won't give him credit, but this is so-and-so friend from college mother. Like three or four people heard this woman say this as introducing her husband to me. They came over there. It's like, no, that's his girlfriend's mother. Yeah, they're dating. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even mean, I say friends because I always say these young kids, you know, and they were like, no. And they got her straight. And I was like, oh, okay. That's how we doing this thing now. Okay. Yeah, I'm her mother, and Yeah, they're dating. And she's like, I'm so sorry. Please don't think that I meant. I said, I wasn't. I didn't think anything about it. When you said friend, I was okay with it because I don't mind you saying friend. I like saying friend too. You know, I don't want to think too deep into anything other than the husband or whatever. But yeah, they like three or four people checked her on it. And they were all, we were the only Black people there, mind you. There was no other Black people other than my children, me and my husband were there. And when I say we did things together all the time, like we went bowling, we went hiking, we just did so many different things together. And it got to the point, like you said, we knew each other's problems in each other's house and stuff like that and shared solutions and whatever, you know, but it was like a family, a thing. And I just think it's because my upbringing, I don't have any guards put up. So I'm starting to get guards though. I noticed it the other day. We were walking in the streets of DC and there were several white guys outside of a truck. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was just my husband and I, and we were walking and they stopped dead mid-sentence and turned around and looked at us. Now, normally I would have never even noticed that. I would have never felt uncomfortable. I would have never been like, wait a minute, what you doing? Why you do that? Why you stop mid-sentence? What do you, wait, don't even try it. I'm not her. You know what I'm saying? I literally had all that going on. That has never happened to me in my life. And I actually got upset with myself. I was like, are you ready for this life? Because you would have never been uncomfortable seeing them. You would have never been standoffish. You would have never been like noticing like they stopped mid-sentence and all of them turned around and looked at you and him. And I don't even know, I didn't even bring it up to him because that's how mad I was with myself. I didn't even say to him, did you notice that they stopped talking and turned around and looked at us?
But why do you think you did that? Is it because of what's going on in this country with the police killings? Is it because I'm always telling you how Black and beautiful we are? Or what is it that you think is changing your perception with respect to that?
Thing came at me from are they listening to white people are supposedly are just trampling over Black people right now. I thought of, oh my God, I hope these white people don't think that I'm the type of Black person that if you do think you're gonna say something slick or come at me and him, we gonna, you know, one of y'all gonna be half eaten by the time the police get here. Like I'm doing some Mike Tyson stuff to you, you know. I'm like, I'm not crawling up in the fetal position and gonna let you kick me. That's not like all of this.
It's the climate. So it's the climate. It's really what's happening in the country at this time.
That's what made me mad. And I didn't know how to fix it. I don't think I enjoyed the meal afterwards. I don't think I enjoyed my moments after that because I was so caught up in, dang, I'm her. I'm there now. Like I'm actually that person now. And I don't like it. I don't like the way it feels because I would never have thought that. I would never have felt all those emotions at one moment. Like,
but I have some other comments, which we are running out of time on the things you said before, but just following this to its logical conclusion, that indeed is why I've said I had to pull back. That's why I think it's important not to allow yourself to be fed a constant diet of slavery movies, of this person got killed, that person got killed, they shot this one, they tackled this one, they punched that, because it changes who you are, and you should be able to maintain control over what your perspective is, even as you're aware. You can be aware without digesting it so much that it really influences you. But back to that story about the kids and the mother saying, this is his friend from college. I just had a meeting a couple of days ago met up with one of my cousins, and we were talking about something along these lines. And he said that to me, but Kim, the ones who really are not racist, they'll check the other white people. You don't have to say anything. They'll check them for you. And then the second point I wanted to make is I used to hate that feeling when I went to school in Wisconsin that because it's primarily white, it just was what, and I had a best friend who was white, and I mean, I'm fine. I can roll with the punches, but I hated feeling deep down like they really don't know Black people and they really don't care for them, but they carve out a Kim exception. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's Kim. She's not like them. That's Kim. And I want you to them to understand, this is how we are. Yeah. You just don't know us. Like, she had never seen a Black person in person before she met me as her roommate the first year in college in the dorm. And so I understood they don't know who we are. I want you to know we're all like this. We're not like those ones on TV. This is us. Right. But they never, I don't think they ever, we didn't have that conversation, but it was my feeling, even at that young age, that they never really got that it was always, we carve out an exception for Kim.
Let me tell you, this is why I think I was even more mad at myself, because I'm the only Black in everything I do. I go to spin class, there's no other Black person, not a man or woman, I'm only there. I go to Pilates, I'm only there. And it's not that that's white people stuff, it's not that, it's just I like to do these things and they're just either, you know, not
it's other the locations where you go, because Black people spin and all that stuff, but it's the locations.
It's just not where I go. So my thing is now I was mad because I thought about it. Is this going to be my new normal where when I walk into places and I'm the only Black now, I feel it. I never felt it before. I never cared. I never felt it. But that moment in DC last week checked me, and I had this, and I'm telling you, I never had it before. I've always watched historic movies, slave movies. I've always watched programming, race, you know, the movies I watch. I love all of it. I love all of everything. I really think that the Trump era of Caucasian man and woman and Karens, you know, the Karens that Karen. I think they have put something in me that make me want to just gather up as many white people and be like, y'all start yelling. Okay, fight. I need y'all to start arguing and fussing and saying how you feel about these people, because it made me, I seen regular people that I know acting like Karen. And I'm like, I never knew.
You've seen people you've known for years switch up in the Trump era and become Karen?
Like a woman out in the store yelling at Black people and saying, I'm going to call the police on you. You shouldn't be in my neighborhood. Like, I don't know this woman personally, but I know that woman. Like, the woman, the way she dressed, the way she talking, the way her head, like, you look like my girlfriend from here. And when did you become her? And it makes me want to look like, I don't know. Y'all going to have to speak up, because Karen has done it in for y'all. Like, I look at some normal, everyday white women that I'm seeing being racist, and I just never saw that in my life before. Not from them, anyway.
And so it goes back, because it's from someone from Alabama, it doesn't faze me. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, because I have awareness. I've always had awareness. Now, I've also had that ability to compartmentalize and put on my rose-colored glasses, and like, it's just, we're all kumbaya, happy-go-lucky, but the awareness is there when it needs to be, right? And so I don't know if you guys are aware of a new term they've come up with recently, but it's pandemic stress experience. They're saying that all of us are now doing that, and it's part of the pandemic, but it's also what went down with George Floyd, and so many people saw it. And so all of that, all of that intersects with the Trump administration and with people saying it's okay now to call people the N-word. It's okay to tell people to go back home because they look Hispanic or they look like they're Asian, not understanding they were born and raised here. All of that for some people was normalized, right? But the thing is, it's always been here. We were, some of us just were not aware that it was here. And now they brought it out to the table, and kind of people think it's okay to be that way. But now you have this awareness.
Trump did that.
It started with McCain and Palin. They brought that fringe in from the border to the table. And now people think it's okay to be this way because you're trampling on my rights to be white or my white right to be a nationalist, but it was always there.
But when John McCain shut it down and said, no, he's not a terrorist, it put some people back in a box. And that's why I said, I want to get those type of people who are willing to see when John McCain said.
Probably they were in a box where you were, but they didn't go back in the box. They did. I was in Alabama. They didn't go back to the box.
Okay, yeah, that was our timer. We always go a little bit along further, but I wanted to make sure everybody heard it because people are talking. I didn't hear it. What timer? So that was it. But we still have some minutes to talk.
Yeah.
But Tawana, you're saying that they were like that all along and they didn't retract.
I've known again, the awareness because of where I was brought up and how I was brought up. And again, you know, I was brought up in a cosmopolitan, just metropolitan, everybody, right? But I had the awareness that it was there. So I've been called the N-word in 1994, right? And that was well before John McCain or Donald Trump. I've been called the N-word in North Carolina. So it was always there, but people didn't feel comfortable bringing it up to the surface. And the first time you saw people kind of getting comfortable was with McCain. And it went on for a minute before he finally had to step up and say, y'all, that's not true.
You're right.
But it was already out. It was it that, you know, the news media had been blocking that stuff and not letting us hear it for quite some time before he spoke up. But then after that, now people feel like they're at the table and they have a right to sit at the table. And so for me, having been in Alabama, it didn't go away.
Okay.
You know, there are still some places where you probably don't want to go at nighttime in Alabama or certain time of the day.
Because I'd like people to ask this question, just because the way I was brought up, did you ever feel like they were just good people and bad people in the world, or you always knew that there were some extreme white people who are horrible and some black people that are bad? Or did you always?
I always knew, because again, you got to understand how my mother raised me. She raised me that all white people are this. She put all of them in a box.
Okay.
And so when we went to Germany, which is the first duty station I was with my dad, they weren't that way. Right now, she still was like, don't you go over their house? Don't you do this? Don't you do this? And they have lights and they have this. But I had friends who were not. So I was young enough to see that you're telling me this, but what I see doesn't compete with what you're telling me.
Okay.
So I've always had to compartmentalize the way I was raised and what my eyes were actually seeing.
Okay.
Right. And so I had a choice when I raised my kids. And sometimes I look back and regret now, and I regret it, but I chose not to point out the black-white divide with them. I didn't want to taint their childhood. Now, by the time they became teenagers, 15s, they started driving, I didn't have a choice. When you drive through this city and you get pulled over by the cops, you're going to be put in handcuffs. So don't argue, don't do this, do what they say. When you get pulled over, your hands are at 10 and 2, you turn on your dome light, you do this. I didn't have a choice at that time because they were driving. I wasn't going to be in the car with them. And so it happened exactly as I did. Now, they didn't get pulled over in one city where all the black people get in handcuffs. They may not like take you down to jail, but you will end up in handcuffs because they just embarrass you like that. It's a tactic. But my daughter got pulled over because she couldn't have been a young black child driving the brand new car I bought her for college. She got pulled over a number of times because she had a car that was new and she had the brand new tag before we got, you know, permanent. So she got pulled over and threatened. She got over and over. And here's a child that loved the police because that's how I raised her. And all it took was two run-in with racist cops. And that just all 19 years of training went out the window. And so it was like, you told me this. And then reality was, but I was like, but I told you, when you stop, 10 and 2, it's yes, sir, no, sir. May I reach for my license? May I reach for my registration? She said, I told you that, but she thought because she had all the white friends that they were all on equal footing. You're not. And so it was painful for her to have to come to that
like
reality.
I'm going to be like your daughter.
It's painful. I heard.
You just said, I was like, oh, this is going to be me.
I have looked back and I was like, maybe I just should have started at 5, but I didn't. I had nieces and nephews that were scared to death of cops, and I didn't want my kids to be scared to death of cops. Now I'm rethinking, like, shoot, maybe I should have started.
My thing is always give yourself a pass, because as a parent, we're just trying to, we do the best that we think we should be doing. We're doing the best that we can with the knowledge we have at that time. And there's no booklet. It's a hit or miss. It's a trial and error. And you never know. Now, even with me, my kids didn't get all of that when they were younger either. I shielded them from slavery stuff. I didn't want them to feel the way you feel when you know your people used to be slaves. And both of them have really close white friends, both are various ones of whom have spent the night at my house on multiple occasions, but they still were getting enough of it to know I'm black. And it just seems like once they got older, they realized on their own that something was different, and they went
talk,
a different way.
The talk that goes among kids, they will wipe everything you've told them out, because there are things that my kids never got at my house, but they knew. And I was like, well, okay.
Get a pass. You get one from me, because parenting is just difficult. And if you are investing your time and your resources and you're thinking about what you're doing and you did the best you knew to do, to me, that was all you could do. Now, the ones who just kicking back with a wine or whatever and not raising their children, that's a different thing, but that's not the kind of parents we are. So give yourself a pass, because I'll take a pass too whenever something pops up like, I did the best I could. Now we're with this situation. How do we address it? How are we going to move forward? But ladies, I think that is it for us. We have, and the time went really fast.
It really did.
It was an hour, but I think we're nearing the end. I'd like to offer you, Tawana, the opportunity to share any last words with our audience. And also, if they want to contact you, to tell them how they could do that.
Even if you're on social media, you can give your social media account.
Okay. So yes, you can find me on Facebook, Tawana Carter Professional and Personal Coaching LLC. That is my business page. And you can also find me there for, you know, Tawana Carter for Facebook. That's my Facebook profile. I am also on Instagram at Coach Carter. I think that's it. Coach Tawana Carter, Coach Carter. Find me on Twitter, Coach Carter. And you can find my website, TawanaCarter.com, and I do have forms there. You can click on those. It will send me a message or an email. And ladies, I want to say I have really enjoyed this. I love talking with grown folk.
Yes.
And getting that connection. And thank you so much. And I would be more than happy to come back and do something, another topic. It would be really good.
You are true. So much, Tawana. We enjoyed it. And we definitely look forward to having you on sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was, I hope you come back, because I got so much more I want to pick your brain about. So yeah, I'll probably be one of those people that hit you up on Facebook too.
And that's good. I would say that anyone can always drop a comment. If you can't find her anywhere else, drop a comment to the podcast or the video, and we'll make sure that she gets the word and is able to respond as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Soror. We appreciate
you. Thank you, Soror, for inviting me. Good to meet you, Tora.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Okay. Another, our guests are so dynamic, and she started us in a direction that I didn't know we would go, but it was so informative.
I'm glad she went there.
Yeah, that was a good one. Another good one.
And then she said doctor, and I was just like, oh my God, yes, Dr. Carter. God sent her, that's all I gotta say.
When I thought about her, I said, you know, she would be a perfect guest, because that's something she has in common with you. And I just thought it would be a good conversation.
I like hearing her perspective too, because it actually is something that I'm going to bring up with me and Victoria that she said, because I didn't realize that, you know, I think a lot of their dating, you know, stems when you said, and their father's Black. And I'm like, I got to ask them about that. Like, is it because your father's Black, that's too much association with a Black man that you like, just the thought of a Black man? No, I'm not doing that.
I'd be interested to know what they said, that, because that's an interesting point. Well, are there any last nuggets that you want to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Other than they have got to stay tuned, because we have just so many more amazing guests.
Things in store. Yes, we do. Well, thank you all for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Good night.